Settle down. Come on, settle down. Okay. First, take out your cell phones. Make sure they're off. I'm happy to see you too. Hello, everyone. How's the sound? Okay. Good evening and welcome to the 18th annual Sobriety Under the Sun convention. My name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. That sounded really good. My home groups are the Serenity Group in Puerto Vallarta and Crack of Dawn in Denver, Colorado. Who would have thought our journeys through the bottle would have brought us all here together? In a convention hall in Puerto Vallarta, 700 strangers together, soon to be friends. As we all know, alcoholics are special. I am. We are the most creative, fun, intelligent, helpful, attractive, and certainly the humblest people on the planet. And I'm excited to spend the weekend with you. Thank you for making sobriety so joyful and colorful. If this weekend you see the opportunity to be of service, take it. Offer a kind smile, a friendly gesture to a stranger. Together, let's make sure anyone, everyone here who might be on the fringes of this amazing program, help them come in and settle. Take a moment now to turn to someone next to you, in front of you, behind you. Shake a couple hands and say hello. After all, we are responsible. Settle down. The theme for this weekend is we are responsible. We have a responsibility to take care of ourselves emotionally, physically, spiritually, so that we can shine the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have the responsibility to share the spirit of AA with all of those around us. It's the joy of a lifetime and an absolute privilege. I'm so grateful to each of you for investing this weekend with us, for making the journey down to Puerto Vallarta to enjoy sobriety, to love life, and to share that joy with others. It's an honor to be the chairperson this year. Working with the committee has been wonderful, and let me say, an incredible growth opportunity. We are all alcoholic. If there's anything the committee can do for you at any time throughout the weekend, don't hesitate to reach out. The hospitality team is wearing their neon yellow shirts. Woo! The committee, can we have the committee stand up? The committee is wearing their name tag with their red badge. Stand up, hold your applause. And then all the volunteers, stand up. thank all of the volunteers who've helped us stuff packets, check-in, merchandise sales, literature sales, lead workshops, lead hourly meetings. Our photographer is Jim. Jim, are you here? Jim has been Sobriety Under the Sun's official photographer, taking pictures over the years. And if anybody wants to see photos from the past, they're out there. He's going to be taking pictures all weekend. If you don't want your picture taken, just say, "Don't take my picture." Okay, housekeeping. Wear your lanyards all weekend. This conference is sold out, and the hospitality team is going to be checking lanyards. And if you're not wearing a lanyard, you might be asked to leave the terrace. So please wear them this weekend. If you purchase tickets for the Saturday night dinner or the Sunday sunset or Monday sober cruise, hold those tickets. They're like cash. You lose it, it's gone. If you've been to the Alano Club downtown, you may have seen the ceramic tiles lining our walls with wonderful messages. You too can have one of those tiles. And you can buy one in memory of someone who's passed, your wonderful sponsor, or someone who has been meaningful in your walk. This year, we're recording all of our speakers. And those will be available for download after the convention. We're recording the speaker panel tomorrow and all four of the speakers. If you plan to go to one of the beach meetings tonight at 10, follow the signs down to the beach. There are suggestion forms in a collection box. We'd love to hear from you. And if you need to leave the room during this speaker meeting, the back doors are not locked, but they're noisy. So if you need to leave the room, we just request that you use the side doors over here because they're quiet. These are those fire egress doors and the bar, it just makes a lot of noise. So go that way if you will. Okay, that's it for housekeeping. Okay, this is an AA convention with Al-Anon participation, and we welcome all the Al-Anons here this year who are here. How many Al-Anons do we have? Okay, we welcome you and thanks for putting up with us. Was that politically correct? Okay, first I'd like to introduce our Al-Anon speaker, Magdalena. Will you stand up, Magdalena? She is speaking tomorrow afternoon at 1, and her talk is meaningful to all of us. AA or Al-Anon alike. So 1 o'clock tomorrow, be here. Or what are they, I don't know, be here. Okay, now I would like to introduce the AA speakers. First, and speaking tonight, we have Andre, woo! We have Karen. We have Bob, Father Bob, Pastor Bob, whatever. I love the diversity of our panel this year. I won't tell you what the diversity is. Hopefully you can figure that out yourself. But I love the diversity, and I really applaud the speaker committee for the diversity of the speaker panel they have chosen for us this year. And now I want to turn the program over to Danielle, who is going to open the meeting for us. Danielle chaired the meeting last year. He's a dear friend and a very special man, so let's give him a hand of applause.
All right.
I'm supposed to turn the page and sit down.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to repeat ourselves. We've done that enough, I guess. My name is Danielle, and I'm an alcoholic. It's so great to be back here. Feels very familiar. You know, I know how hard Pat has worked all year with the committee, you know, and I'm so grateful, you know, to have you as a friend and to be back here celebrating this celebration with you. Thank you. So my home group is the Serenity Group here in Puerto Vallarta. And yeah, I'd like to acknowledge too some of my friends from Ottawa, Canada. All right, all right. Okay, let's have a moment of silence to reflect on the reason we are here. And the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. In keeping with the principle, please do not post recognizable photos of identifiable AA members on website accessible to the public, including unrestricted pages on social networking sites, and whatever the medium, no disclosures of a member affiliation with AA can rightfully be made by anyone but that individual himself or herself. The assurance of anonymity is essential in all efforts to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. Now I would like to introduce Jay, who will come up and read how it works.
Oh, sobriety is amazing. It's good to be here. Great to be a part of this. My name's Jay, and I'm an alcoholic. This is how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclosed in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. If you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures avail us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our life had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amend to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order. I can't go through with it." Don't be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we are alcoholic and couldn't manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and if we were sought. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gaylene, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Thanks for My Sobriety, Wednesday, Langley, BC. Canada. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous are: one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Least problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professionals, but our service centers may employ special workers. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Now it is my pleasure to introduce our speaker, Andre M., who joins us from Osling, New York. Osling, New York. Andre will share his experience, strength, and hope with us this evening.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Andre Mingo. I'm an alcoholic and addict, AKA Good Day Dre. I never have a bad day. I don't know what they are. I want to thank everybody in the committee who invited me here. I always said I would never go to a convention. And next thing you know, I get invited, and my higher power said, Andre, you don't go to conventions. You're going to go and participate in one. And I looked up and I said, oh, thank you. You know, whenever I say no, he says yes. I've learned not to try and wrestle with the big guy. I'm a loser. I'm not one for telling a whole lot of war stories, but I'll be happy to tell you how I ended up in the rooms. But I'm gonna go gradually from when I was a little kid when I had an attitude problem. My sobriety date is, this makes this amazing. I'm doing this today and next month, February 26th, is my 28th anniversary. So like, so like the big guy in the sky decided he wanted me to get sober today. And he said, moving on, maybe he could help somebody. I was born in New York City, in Harlem, New York City. One of five children. Mother had to take care of five children. Now, I had an attitude problem back then. It had nothing to do with alcohol. I just had an attitude problem. She turns, I'm gone. I had to wear a harness. I was on the subway one day, and she told me I grabbed hold of a woman's fox stole on the subway, and I wouldn't let go. She had to beat me off of it. So that just lets you know that when I wanted to do something, no matter what you said, I'm going to do what I wanted to do, and there had to be repercussions. As I said, there were five kids. I had problems in elementary school, Catholic elementary school, that they decided to throw me out in May. I was supposed to graduate in June, and they said, we won't tolerate you in the school anymore. So it just so happens, I was going to New Jersey every summer, and my mother said, would you like to go to New Jersey to go to school? And what she was saying, you are going to New Jersey to go to school. It would be a lot easier. I only have to take care of four kids instead of five. And what she did, going to New Jersey, some people call it trauma, drama. I went from an all-black and Puerto Rican school out to New Jersey, affluent community, where the school I went to, I was the only black in the school. I'm sitting there saying, uh-oh. Now, I didn't know what was going to happen, how it was going to happen. I had fear with the people. People had fear with me because, and this is back in the time when racism was prevalent. So I had to deal with, what am I supposed to do? I'm not sure. I can't have an attitude, but I can have an attitude. So I had to have an attitude so nobody would bother me. And they weren't sure about me because they didn't want me to bother them. I was in a dilemma. One good thing about it, though, I got a decent education instead of being in Harlem and going to school there. What it did, it taught me how to be a chameleon. I've learned the streets of New York City. And I also learned how to be in an affluent community. And I combined them, and I became dangerous. I came up with answers that I wanted. I could fix my own stuff. And I tell people I never had a father figure. I had no male mentors. I was smart, and I brought myself up. Look where it landed me. I did a good job, right? So I sit here, and I say I went there. I went through high school, attitude problem. Assistant principal told me, why don't I quit school and go in the Army? That's a Vietnam time. I'm saying, why do you do it? You know, I'm passing my grades, you know. Then somebody decided to give me a scholarship to college. Me? Oh. So I got a scholarship to college. So I went to college, and that's where stuff started happening. Started happening, really. Somebody said to me in college, they said, why are you here? Somebody else could use the money because all you're doing, man, is wasting your time. And I wanted to out for some reason. And I said, you are right. And I quit college. Then I came out and I said, wow. I went to another college, stayed for a little while. I quit that college. See, I'm smart. I went and applied to another college, got accepted. Went to a few classes and quit that college. I'm getting real smart. I figured I'd learn how to survive in the world the way that I normally did, and it would be all right. And I'm gonna bypass a whole lot of stuff that happened. I had a friend, somebody I bumped into on the road. Never saw him before in my life, and it was Christmas time. And he said to me, do I know you? And I said, no, I don't know you, but do you know me? No. He said, you wanna go have a drink? Yeah. We became friends. I'm not gonna tell you his name, but his uncle, grand uncle, designed Central Park. And he told me, we became friends. Now, I was an employment and training counselor at the time. You needed a college degree for it. I got the job without a college degree. So now you know my ego is really kicking up because I could do things that other people have to go to school for 4 years for, and I don't have to. I'm smart. What it was is not that I was really smart. I learned how to manipulate people the way I needed to manipulate them to get the things that I wanted. At no expense to them, I could care less about them. So I went through that whole process. He got me to quit the school as a counselor because he started a business of doing hand painting of collectibles. And he asked me to come work for him. And I said, I'm not creative. He said, yes, you are. I said, no, I'm not. He said, yes, you are. So he talked me into quitting the job. So I went into jewelry business, creating jewelry and doing hand painting of collectibles. And that was in Jersey. We're drinking every day, and we got thrown out of New Jersey, and I moved, and this is the best part, man. I moved to New Hampshire. I call it New Hampshire, but it's New Hampshire. Rockstar capital of the world. I was so far up there that the only thing darker than me up there were bears. It was, so you talk about drama and trauma, going from Harlem to affluent community, then going up to New Hampshire, and I'm thinking that I'm all right. I'm not all right. I'm up there, I'm scared, but I can't show it to anybody. I had a little old lady up there that I used to teach her how to paint, and when I critiqued the work, she came to me one day and said, Andre, do you know how easy it would be to lose you in the woods up here? Oh, my God. I sat there and said, no. And you know, give me a drink. You know, I had so many things that happened up there in New Hampshire, it was funny. You know, I was playing a lot of basketball at the time. I was playing all these high school teachers. And for some reason, they said, let's go have a beer, man. I said, why not? I'll go to the beer with them, you know. I didn't realize they were taking me into the American Legion. Oh. When I walked through that door in the American Legion, you know, like in the movies where everything stops? I'm walking, and everything stopped. The liquor stopped that being poured, that froze. Everything froze. Because I shouldn't have been in there. And my attitude, and my arrogance, and my sarcasm, even though I knew I shouldn't be there, I sat down and had a beer anyway. And I said, how you like me now? And I got up and left. I was always challenging something. And it was not always to my benefit. But it didn't matter because I wasn't smart enough to realize what I was actually doing to myself. I came back down from New Hampshire one day to visit my aunt and grandmother who lived in Jersey. And when I came down to talk to them, to see them. Not really, let me tell the truth. One of the things my friend said, I should sit up here and say, do you want me to sound good? Or do you want me to tell the truth? They said, you know, don't sound good, Andre, don't sound good. You've been in the program too long, man. Honesty is what it's supposed to be and how we're supposed to do it. Because if you start lying now, you're going to continue to lie. It's repetition. I don't like that. I've earned my place. So I came down to visit my aunt, as I said, not to visit them. Went to a house to have fun and party. And for some reason, my fingers on both hands turned totally white. I'm going, shaking them, water, circulation is dead, and I don't know why. So I decided from the friend's house I would go up to the house that I grew up in. I pulled up in front of the house. Lights are on in the house. The color came back to my fingers. I called the police, come to find out my aunt and grandmother were just taken to the hospital with a heart problem. Circulation came back. So I called my friend up in New Hampshire. I told him I have to quit. I told him what happened. And he came down. I brought all my stuff back down. And I began to take care of my aunt and grandmother. Here I am, 35 years old, prime of my life. I'm taking care of a sick grandmother and a sick grandaunt. I'm changing diapers. I'm feeding them, taking them to the doctor. I was doing all the things that one at my age should not be doing. And I'm drinking. I hired a nurse from an agency, manipulated her to leave the agency, because I'll pay you 3 times as much money if you stay in my house, room and board, and you take care of them. They agreed. Cost me a lot of money, but I didn't care about money. For all the stuff that I was doing, I still had something in my heart, man, knowing what was right, you know, to take care of my family. Part of that is part of being responsible. Everything I've done in some sort of way in life, I had to be responsible for. On one end of the scale, negative, and on the positive side. But I had to be responsible to him. I was so responsible for him that one day I went in a room and caught the lady. She had a bottle of alcohol under her chair in her room. Caught attitude. I fired her. My rationale was, if anybody was going to drink and take care of them, it's me, and I pay myself. So that's what I did. Granted, I was drinking all the time. When my aunt died, the doctor said I did an excellent job. They don't know how I did it. I don't know how I did it either, considering I was drinking. Something gave me some strength that I didn't know that I had. And I wasn't sure what it actually was. It took a while for me to understand what it actually was. What had happened after that? Of course, along the way, you know, we all have hostages. I took hostages. I dumped them. I had hostages. I dumped them. I caused a lot of chaos in their life, you know, that I had to make amends to and put them on lists and all that stuff that they talk about what you're supposed to do, you know. Which I didn't want to do, but that's further down the road because I still have a little bit more to go before I ended up coming into rooms because I did feel I had a problem. I knew I didn't have a problem. Other people knew I had a problem, but how do you tell somebody that's self-sufficient, that brought themselves up, that they had a problem when nobody else helped me before? Or I didn't want to let anybody in to help me before, because that's a lot of fear. That's dangerous. I become vulnerable, and we couldn't have that out there in the real life, the lifestyle that I grew up in. Wouldn't happen. One of the other things in New Hampshire that happened to me, my landlord that was up there, they had motorcycle weekend up there one time. And he came to me and said, Andre, you know, you go to Jersey an awful lot on the weekends. He said, would you mind going this weekend? And I said, why? He says, he didn't want any crosses burned on his lawn. I'm like, whoa. So I'm between a rock and a hard place. Should I catch this attitude with people? Should I become just as nasty and angry at people? Or should I just back off? Just back off. I got tired of the stuff that happened from Harlem, from New Jersey to New Hampshire. It's like I'm getting tired of getting beat up, you know. I'm ready to react. I didn't react. I left it alone. So I was up in Jersey, finally got a house, had a hostage, threw her out. She sent me to a rehab, said, "You got a problem drinking?" I said, "No, I don't." She said, "Yeah." So we decided to go into a rehab. All that you heard now is all part of my war story. It's done. It's all gone. We're going to talk about sobriety. We're going to talk about responsibility. We're going to talk about a higher power. We're going to talk about how I stay sober, you know, how difficult it was, how it was not difficult. Only difficult when I decided I wanted it to be difficult, and the challenges that I faced in the rooms. Because when I went up to Westchester, New York, Ossining was another New York City, to New Jersey, to West New Hampshire, and I went to Westchester County. It was the same damn thing again. I'm saying, what's going on here? Now, I said I went to a rehab. In the rehab, the young lady asked me to go to rehab, so I said, "Yeah, man, keep the relationship together." I know we've heard all of that. I'm going for it because she wanted me to go. You know that doesn't work, but we're going to do it because we think we're going to come out on top. I showed it further on the bottom by doing that, because when I came out to rehab, she took everything I had, man, and went to California. I came out, I tried to decide whether I wanted to go to California and choke her to death. But something said, "Andre, don't be that stupid, because if you go to California and you're in trouble, your sister's here in Ossining. I have another brother doing 225 years to life in jail. I have another brother that don't know where he is. I have another brother he's on his way to death from cancer. What's going to happen to me if I go out there? I'm done. Who's going to bail me out?" Not that I was worried about killing somebody. Who is going to bail me out? So I decided I'm not going to California, right? So I stayed here, and I tried to figure it all out. I figured I could always make more money. I was talking with somebody earlier about how we made money for years. I made a lot of money. And I told him, let's not talk about what we should have, would have, could have, all the money that we made. It doesn't make any sense to talk about what we made. Do we have it now? Why talk about it? We don't recoup it. It does not come back. Let's not get stupid now, you know? And we got two sober men talking that. It doesn't make sense. Why bother? So I said I could always make more money. Not like I was making before. You know, all the habits that I was doing before, I couldn't. I'm a convicted felon 3 times. I'm not supposed to be standing here, except the big guy helped me along the way. The last time I saw a judge, the judge told me, "The next time you come in front of me, just bring a toothbrush." When people are talking about anxiety coming here to speak, I'm saying, "No, I'm good." They said, "You're not excited?" I said, "No, I'm good." Then I told them what anxiety was. The judge saying, "Come in front of me again with the toothbrush." That's anxiety. That's fear. That's a uh-oh. Yeah, I'm done. You know. So after the young lady took all my stuff, bless her today. I have no resentments today. What part did I play in it? I played the whole part. Whatever she did, she saved herself by getting away from me. And if she would have stayed there, I would have did more damage. And God knows what would have happened. And I may have never come into these rooms. So I have to give her that prop for putting me in that position. So what had happened was, I want to talk about sobriety right now. I could go on and on and on about sobriety. But the way I came in these rooms, some people say they didn't believe it. One day, as I'm living in Westchester, what I did, I called the old girlfriend I was living with in New Hampshire, and I said, "Can I come up for a week? Come up." So I drove up there for a week. I drank 24/7. She was the best cook in the world. I did not eat anything. I drank 24/7 like I never drank before in my life. I thought I was going to die on my way back down from alcoholic poisoning. I'm done. Done. So I go to this meeting, and there's some guy sitting up front in a chair. I'm like, you know, I'm hurting. I don't want to hear nobody. And he's yap, 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 yap. It's some beginner's meeting or whatever it was, you know. And I'm just, you know, I'm raw. I don't know anything. And then I heard somebody say, what you should do, at the end of the meeting, you get this sheet of paper, and you have people's name on it. You can find yourself a sponsor, you know. So I grabbed the paper and I took it home. So the next night, I'm starting to really feel bad. Now, mind you, I did go to a rehab. That was in December. They let me out December 24th. And I came in here February 26th, so like 2 weeks before I came into the rooms then, that's when I went out for that long, week-long run. But when I came in the next time, and I heard that guy yab, 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 whatever he was talking about, you see, they all speaking that secret language when we first come in. It becomes scary. I sit there and go, wow, this guy. So I took the paper home, and the next day, I'm feeling so bad, I made a phone call. I dialed the first number, and the line was busy. I caught an attitude. If I call on this number, you're supposed to pick up the phone. I don't care who you are. Yeah, in your brain, you're supposed to know this is Andre calling. And I sat there for a minute. I threw the paper aside. I started watching TV again, maybe for a minute or so, not any long length, you know. And then I picked up the paper again, and I said, all right, I'm going to number two guy. Number two guy had a German last name. I looked at that. Nobody German can help me. I was drinking Heineken. I threw the shit aside. You know, I'm going back to watch TV. And then something happened. This thought came into my head and said, Andre, every time you've been taking shortcuts, you always had to go back to the beginning. And I'm like, if somebody was really talking to me, I would have been turning my head, looking around, you know? But it was just something here. Common sense was starting to float back in. The truth was starting to float in. That's that little crack that we talk about. And I didn't even know that was part of the crack. So I picked up that phone number, the paper again, and I dialed the first number. And the guy picked up the phone, and he says, hi, how are you? Who are you? I said, I'm Andre. I said, I'd like to go to a meeting. He says, well, there's one tomorrow night and the next night. Wow. They told me if I call this number, man, I call him, somebody will come help me now. He's telling me tomorrow and the next day. What to do? I said, no, I need to go to a meeting. He said, I said, there's a meeting tomorrow night and the next night. So this is how they work. He said to me, he had the audacity to ask me. He said, and what's your problem? Oh. I started crying like a baby man, like when you're a little kid. Snot coming out your nose. Balling. I'm 42 years old. I'm crying like a baby to somebody on the phone that I've never seen before in my life and don't even know who I was talking to. Oh, that's the crack that opening. That's that healing that started to come, and I didn't even know what that was. So he said to me, there's a meeting tomorrow night and the next night. I'm like, what's going on here? So I said to him, no. So I was told if I dial somebody on his phone, they'd come and help me right now. I'll show you. Due to my surprise, he said, I'll be right there. Yo. That's that old 12 step that they talk about. That's part of being responsible that we're talking about. I didn't know nothing like that. He pulls up in front of my sister's house. I go out to the car. I open the door. My desire to drink and jug left me. The man that I called number one on the list was the man just the night before was going, yab, 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 that I wasn't coming. What the fuck? I laughed today, because that's when I call it my uh-oh moments. Uh-oh, now something's going on. My other uh-oh moments here, I'm in Westchester County, New York. Up in Westchester, you had a place called Montrose Psychiatric Hospital. You have Indian Point Nuclear Plant. You have Sing Sing Prison. People know about Sing Sing. They used to execute people there. You have Route 9, one way in, one way out. If something happens, we're all dying. And they had AA. It was like, which one are you going to pick, Dre? Because you're close to Sing Sing now. You might be closer to the psychiatric hospital, but they won't let you in because you're not a veteran. What are you going to do? So I stayed with AA. There were three men that were going to, I still had the house in Jersey. There were three men that was going to a men's group in another town called Croton. And I still had the house in Jersey. I'd drive from New Jersey some 80 miles on a Saturday morning to sit in a room with these three guys. One had 10 years, one had 11 years, one had 12 years. People would ask me why. Their meetings all in between. I didn't have an answer for them. I just knew my car had to go to the rooms where they were in. I would have never drank with these guys. Matter of fact, I didn't know if I liked them because I just met them. But something drew me to sit inside that room with them as they told their little stuff. That's that little crack. Don't even know the crack was there. Uh-oh. Why is this happening? The belligerent one, the arrogant one, the sarcastic one, the one that you couldn't tell me anything. Why am I listening to people I've never met before, never seen before, man, and certainly don't trust? What is going on? Uh-oh. So I came into the rooms. And what I did, I've heard them talking all the time about you have to change everything about you. Everything. I'm sitting there saying, I'm 42 years old, man, what are you talking about? Me change, right? But something happened. I've had guns to my head, knives to my throat, man, police chasing me, all kind of stuff like that, you know? And you talk about fear, I just had to make sure I got away from them. You know, I had the gift of gab. I had somebody put a gun in my head. I'm looking down to see my name on the bullet, and I manipulated my way. Where he put the gun down and said, I'll be back later with your money. He never saw me again. I had the gift. But I was running out of all of those manipulating ways. I was losing my edge. And I'm sitting there saying, what's going on? I was feeling vulnerable. I was hurting real bad. And I kept driving up to this place with these three guys, man. And I don't know why. And I kept doing it, and people would ask me why. I said, my car goes there. I didn't have an answer for you. I just know my car showed up there. That's where I learned the concept in the rooms where they talk about, you know, cars, the cars got the wheels themselves. But let me tell you about my first sponsor, that arrogant son of a, I didn't like him. The one that picked me up and I said, uh-oh. So when I came into the rooms, he was talking about the steps, and I told him, I said, I quit three college, man, I'm smart. My comprehensive level is extremely high. I went to Catholic elementary school. I know about adjectives, verbs, pronouns. He said, oh, I got one of these guys. Now we're talking to old timers back in the day, man. They didn't come out with any whipped cream and cherry on top. They were brutal. So my sponsor then said to me, what I would like you to do, Andre, is call me every day at 6:30. I'm gonna call the man at 6:30, right? Sure, I will. Please. But I'm gonna do it because he suggested it. That's what you people say do. And they said, here's the rope, I'll let you hang yourself. I looked at him, huh? He was trying to tell me, I think that I'm so confident about what I think I'm doing. And if I stay that confident, I'm gonna hang myself. Back up, son. You didn't come in here because you knew everything. You came in here because you were hurting and you needed some help. Then I heard all you people. I say all you people because I'm just plain rude. I put it all in one box. And they were talking about this thing called fear. And all of you say it. They talk about this thing, fear. I said, I had guns in my head, man. What are you talking about? And they said, the fear of change. And they talked about, you have to change everything. I'm 42 years old and you're talking about change. I'm in Westchester County. No man's land one more time. I know nobody. I didn't drink up there. I knew nobody. And you gotta tell me about I have to change everything. Well, the fear kicked in when I sat there and I said, well, what do I have to change? We can do that. Masquerading what was really happening inside. And then it kicked in. Now I'm getting a little worried here, and I'm getting worried. How am I supposed to change it? Wow, I don't know anybody here, and they're telling me it has to change. Well, if mine didn't work, and you're telling me to change, who am I supposed to trust in order for me to begin this change? I'm in a dilemma. What do I do? I manipulate everybody and I get it done the way that I think it should be done because that's what I always done, so I'll be happy as hell. Then the third kicker, the last part of that, what will I change into? Bang, it hit me. I'm done now. I'm finished because now I'm lost. Totally lost because I have no idea of what they're talking about or what I have to change or how I have to change it or when I'm supposed to change it, if I'm able to change it at all. And I sat there and I tried and I just showed up and I showed up. I pissed and moaned. I hollered and screamed, stomped my feet, poked my lip out. Just kept coming. People were taking bets on whether or not I was gonna stay. I was questioning whether or not I was an alcoholic or not because my desire left me immediately. So I'm good now. You know, I'm still trying to convince myself to try and fool myself that I was all right. And when I sat there and talked about Indian Point, Sing Sing, and AA Route 91, and the only reason why I talk about that is because, see, everybody I ran with in the streets and so forth, they were all dead or in jail. There was nobody left of my crew, of the people that I hung with. And it's like the higher power sat there and said, Andre, you're too stupid to get sober by yourself. But let me introduce you to something new. You have the opportunity to listen to some other people. I'm giving you the opportunity to help yourself. I'm putting people in front of you that can help you if you want the help. Or you can end up like your crewmates, they're all in jail, but they're dead. I'm giving you this last chance. That's why he brought me to Westchester. I've been back to Jersey, I think, once. I sold a house I had in Jersey. I never went back. People, places, and things people talk about. I knew about that before they talked about people, places, and things. I wasn't going back. For some reason, I got saved. Why me? Why would you waste your time with me? The smart guy, the one who thought he was so smart, the one that thought he was so good and so smart because he took care of an aunt and a grandmother. So he's patting himself on the back saying he's such a wonderful person. But also the one who got rid of all these hostages that had treated him like garbage, saying, I'm still such a wonderful person. And I stuck around. I have another little story I can tell you in sobriety. Sobriety is supposed to be good, right? Yeah, keep lying to yourself here.
Yeah.
Yo, we all say, yeah, man, it's all good. Yeah, that's a lie. I never worked so hard in my life. You're trying to stay sober. It was so bad that I used to tell everybody, man, oh, it's easy, it's easy. Because if I would have told myself that it was difficult, I would have left the rooms. I kept hearing, fake it till you make it. And see, I have a problem with some of these little slogans that the people had in the rooms. I didn't want to tap into this stuff, but I have to. You want me to be honest? Did I hear that? Okay, here we go. You know, you come up with all these little phrases that one has. Sound like a bunch of parrots. If you leave it up to my own devices, I say, shut up. Can't you come up with something creative? You have a saying out there in Jersey, they say, itty bitty shitty committee. That's when your head is all messed up. I'm looking at him, I'm saying, what are you talking about? I said, I have static cling, and my higher power is my fabric softener. They said, Andre, where do you come up with this stuff? I tell them, I'm an individualist, even though I'm in the rooms. I have to say stuff to myself that makes sense to me to keep me sober. I can't just listen to what you say because that's what you do. To me, it doesn't make sense. Now, mind you, I'm starting to sound good, right? I like sounding good. Then I get humbled, man, because I get smacked, man, when you think you're so good and the ego gets popped. I've had so many things happen in sobriety. Here's another little story that happened in sobriety with you AAs, man, when I trusted you people. And if anybody gets offended by that, call your sponsor. I was living in a rooming house. There were guys that were living upstairs from me. I heard this big boom one day, and I run upstairs to see what happened. And these guys attacked me. These 20-year-old guys, man, they were young and shit. They attacked me. I'm 40-something years old, man. Why are you attacking me? We scrapped. Police came. They let them go. Let them drive off. I say, here I am, man. One more time. I'm in Westchester. Here we go. This racism hit. I'm pumping it up now. Here we go. So I go. I tell my sponsor. I tell my sponsor, I said, I'm going to kill these guys. I'm hot. My sponsor said to me, he's such a smart guy. He said, why? I had no answer. It just threw me off. I was waiting for him to give me some long, elaborate explanation. He just said, why? So I didn't. Now, I'm still living in the same rooming house with them still upstairs, even though this happened. And in the meantime, I'm chairing meetings for him. So I'm opening it up. And one day, the two guys walked in at a meeting. I just go, oh, man. Do I hit him with a chair or with a table? It's my chance. Yo, oh, it's my chance. I stopped the meeting. And I said to them, whatever it was that I did to you that you wanted to do me bodily harm, I'm truly sorry. Bang. That was my third year. My sobriety took off. It's like all the garbage that was sitting in here. It left me. That's that crack that fully opened. It was saying, like, Andre, you're free. He said, you're following me. You're doing it. You're doing it. I had another guy in my third year. He was a friend of mine that saw me when I first came in. Alan, he's passed away now. And he came back down from Boston, and he walked up to me and said, Andre, what happened to you, man? What happened? I said, what are you talking about? He said, you've changed. And I looked at him like, whoa. Because when we change, we don't see it ourselves. We might think we see it. But no, that's just some little rationalization that we have to say, oh, I'm a little bit better. We usually don't see it. The only way for it to get projected is by doing service, by helping others, responsible. Going to meetings, responsible. Back then, we had to throw out ashtrays and garbage and mop floors and all kind of stuff, being responsible. Today, they don't even make the newcomers, man, move a chair. Damn. They're so soft on them. They're going to bruise them. They're going to hurt their feelings. And they wonder why they have a hard time. Grow up. As I said, I'm an old timer. I got that label. My 15th year. I used to call people old timers, you know. You guys are really tight, man. I like you guys, man. You teach me everything I know. And two of them came up to me and they said, you gotta stop that, man. What are you talking about? I said, you gotta stop calling us old timers. Why? They said, because you are one. Oh, don't lay that on me, man. Here we go, responsible, being responsible. Now you're gonna lay that on me. Now you want me to do the stuff that you're doing to help other people. Instead of me falling behind you saying, yeah, keep teaching me. No, I have to become the teacher. Oh, that's a tough one. I had another guy that used to always sit in the corner and always say he's not going to let anybody take away my serenity. He said, I'll never be a doormat. Named Jerry, bless him. I was getting upset because he passed away. And it was tough. And another old timer, his brother-in-law, came up to me and said, Andre, man, don't be upset, man. I said, why, man, he died? He says, no, we didn't. Take his place. Damn. Here you go, a little bit more responsibility that you want me to have that I really don't want to have. Do the things that I don't want to do. As I'm sitting here today talking to you, it's things that I don't want to do because I never wanted to do a convention. And here I am participating in one because somebody said I should do it that I didn't want to do. And I'm scared I talked a little fast that they may have recorded it. I'm a character, man. I tell you, man. Being sober is so much fun. Now, mind you, I still have all these character defect flaws. Somebody gave me a t-shirt one day, a sweatshirt. It says, Andre has arrived. And on the back it says, stop. You know, Andre, stop that nonsense. I said, I can't wear this t-shirt, this sweatshirt. What would people think? You know, can't do that. I never wore it either. But there's so many little things, man, when I have my character defects that I have to be careful of. Because they say they never leave us. It might diminish a little bit, but it depends on my spiritual strength and my spiritual growth and what I truly believe in. You know, if I let it creep in, somebody's in trouble. One of the lines I use, man, if I'm getting agitated, I'm getting pissed off, and I don't want to be bothered, I say to the people, don't come into the lion's den with pork chop underwear on. I'm going to eat you up. Don't come in. I'm warning you first, because when I bite you, chances of me making amends are slim than none. And I try and bite you gently, so I don't have to make amends. See, I learned that art too. How to get rid of you where I don't have to make amends, and I really don't hurt your feelings that bad. But you're still gonna have to go to your sponsor and talk to him. That's a gift, if one doesn't know it or not. Try it sometimes. It might bite you. I've learned in here that what everybody else does is not the stuff that I'm supposed to do also. I talk about that I am an individualist. We talk about the path. I get a kick out of that one. Andre, I want to be like you. Andre, I want to do it the way you do it. And I say, no, you don't. You don't want to do it the way I did it. You don't want to have to go through the pains and aggravation and troubles because I tried to manipulate and I didn't want to listen, you know, do it my way. You're a glutton for punishment. You're a fool. I tested everything. But I kept coming. I'm going to tell you another little uh-oh story. Somebody calls me uh-oh in the rooms. They go, hi, uh-oh. I was at work one day. I'm slamming stuff around. I'm a concrete technician. I test the strength of concrete. I'm throwing stuff around. I'm slamming doors, man. I go out. I work by the river. And I go outside, slam the door, and I'm and I look up, and an eagle flew down, hovered, had red eyes, looked at me. I took a deep breath and said, uh-oh. He turned and left. People said, Dre, I believe in a higher power. I had prostate cancer. I was knocked out on the gurney. The nurses said when they wheeled me to the elevator, all of a sudden my hand went up like this, pointing to the higher power. They said nobody ever does that. He saved me. I get emotional with that. I earned it. I was at work one day slamming doors one more time. Sitting on a crate, pissed. You know, people piss me off. I don't like people. I really don't. Yo. So I'm sitting here, and I see this little bird sitting down there. I'm like, sitting. Who am I going to get next? I'm pissed. And the bird hop up on the dock. I look over. There's a little crate next to me. And the bird hops up on the crate. I'm like looking. Then one of the co-workers walks in the room. He says, Andre, what's that bird sitting there with you for? So it wasn't my imagination. Somebody else saw it. And I took a deep breath and I was all right. Sometimes metaphors and things that happen, one has to see the sign. I have some friends in the room that when we first saw each other, it was like, damn, yes. I met a couple up here just this weekend. Got some young man sitting right here. I connected right away. I won't say his name. He knows who it is. Got another one down here. I met them. I'm saying, whoa, thank you. Putting new people in my life that are on the same guidelines as me. And that's important. Because the people that talk a lot of BS, please don't even talk to me. I am a positive individual. I believe in positive repetition. If I do something positive over and over and over and over again, it's going to be part of me. That's how I live my life today. I'm still a son of a bitch, though. Some of that stuff will never go away. And if I sit here and say it's going to go away, you wanted me to tell the truth tonight, right? It's not going to go away. Because I'm human before I'm sober. That's part of life that we have, that we all have to live with. But see, the biggest thing about this, I don't have to drink anymore. I don't like a lot of people in AA. I can't stand a whole lot of you. I say I don't mean it, but I do. You know, well, one, because I don't know you, so I can't like you. But I have plenty of love for you. And that gift was given to me from a higher power. Because as they talk about being responsible, if you're here trying to stay sober one more day at a time, as me, I have to show the love for you. I have to put my hand out for you. I have to show you the things that I do and how I do them, and maybe you could pick up on little bits and pieces that can help you out just one more day. It's not about a week. It's not about the future. It's about right now. Some people have it harder than others. Some people are chronic relapsers. I can't kick them to the ground. Constitutionally incapable of grasping and developing in a matter that we need. They are out there. If the man did not start this fellowship, none of you would have a seat. There'd be no convention. None of you would know each other. Nobody said they break bread across the street from one another. You walk down the hallways, you're smiling, you say hi. This young man over here, I bumped into him, I walked up to him, I said, I remember when you walked through the door. He's like looking at me like I'm out of my mind. Then I see him on the beach. I was taught when I came in, I have to do something every day, and I promised myself this, every day that I don't want to do, but I have to do something. And I started with, if I didn't drop a piece of paper and a seed on the floor, pick it up and throw it in the garbage. If I don't know you, I smile at you and say hello. Hold the door for you, and I never seen you before. All kind of little stuff like that. It's called changing. If you change all these little things, you can change the bigger things. One of the things, I was a very impatient person. I love telling this one, because people think I was out of my mind. I was so impatient that when I came into rooms, back then, you didn't have cell phones, you didn't have debit cards. You had the little ladies that had to run and check the shelves and check the prices and stuff. I stand in the longest line with a loaf of bread every time I needed bread and wait. Now I change the line to feed the smallest one, the shortest line. I do it. Every time I went in, I went to the longest line. And I do it over and over and over and over. I just talked about positive repetition. That's how you do stuff like that. And not just with the loaf of bread, it's with your sobriety. Repetition. Smile when you don't want to smile. They talk about letting it go. That's another topic. I got a kick out of that one. Let it go? Are you out of your mind? Don't you realize what they did to me? Don't you realize what you did to them for what they did to you? It's not always about somebody else. It's about me. It's about what I do. I don't have to have that argument if I don't initiate it. If two people don't bang, There's nothing there. And here's another one about getting humbled. You know, people talk about getting humbled in here. You ever been in the middle of an argument? In the middle of the argument, you find out you're wrong? What the fuck you do with that one? Humble pie, what do you do with that one? You gonna retract it and say, oh, sorry, I'm wrong? You know, I said all these little things that I tried to manipulate and I tried to do my whole life, man, it comes back to haunt me. My grandmother used to say, man, a hard head makes a soft behind. You know, I'm saying you must be out of your mind. I came back now in these rooms, I have a soft behind. If it don't come out in the wash, it comes out in the rinse. I'm here now, this is the rinse, because the wash didn't work. I'm telling you, you know, it's all these little things that I try and do. You know, I sit here and talk about, people talk about how to things are running around in their head and they can't get things straight. You know, one of the things I talk about running around in a round room looking for an answer. You can't get an answer in a round room if you just keep going around. I had to wait for the big guy to drop a block in there, so when I run into it, I hit my head and I said, what happened? Let me start over. We can always start over. I don't believe in giving up. I gave up before. I destroyed before. It hurt before. I don't have to hurt anybody today. I don't have to hurt myself today. People gave me the thing, Footprints in the Sand, little poem, Footprints in the Sand. Damn. I cried when they gave me that. I cried like a baby. And I said, oh man, I didn't realize, man, that was being carried for so long, man, it just carried and carried and carried and carried, and he didn't give up on me. Why me? What did I do to deserve him not giving up on me? Today, you might see 3 footprints, because I limp a lot. You don't carry me anymore. I work hard at this. I try and help others. One of the things I fail at, now I don't fail, I don't want to. I don't sponsor people. I did in the beginning. I got all the prison people, all people just coming out of jail. I'm like, oh, stop, no, man. I'm trying to get sober, man, you're killing me. Then I was told by my sponsor, you don't have to sponsor anybody. Andre, you go to enough meetings all over the place. You do service all over the place. Whenever somebody calls you, the chair, the speaker of the meeting, you say, okay. You do so much, you don't need to sponsor anybody. If you were doing nothing, then yeah, you need to do something. But I get so much input, and by doing all of that, I'm helping sponsoring other people just by giving them the little bit that I have, that they hear me when I share. Hopefully somebody will get something out of this tonight. I pray somebody gets something out of this tonight to stay sober one more time. Here you go, Andre, caring about other people besides myself. Is there something wrong with me? If so, would somebody please tell me? Or am I being responsible? As I sit here in this fellowship, talking about what we should do, because it doesn't hurt. It hurts if we don't, and we know we should have. Oh, that guilt and that shame that one would carry, is it worth it? It'll make you drink again. How do I know? I've seen it happen over and over and over and over and over and over and over, and I can keep going. For all the ones that think they are better than the fellowship, think they are better than the next man, to me that's a scary thought. And I say that because I walk on the same ground as everybody else. And with that, it's 9:21. I think I'll give you the rest of the night for yourselves, and thank you very much for letting me share.
Okay. Hey guys, before we close tonight, just a couple of things. I'm sorry. I know you're a little antsy. So tomorrow morning, 7 a.m., there's yoga and beach meetings. Tonight, 10 o'clock, there's meditation and beach meetings. And just follow the signs down to the beach. And remember, buses stop at 10 o'clock if you're going anywhere. If you go to one of those, you'll have to get back wherever another way. And let's link up and close with the Serenity Prayer. And thank you, Andre. Okay, I'm sorry, somebody asked me to make an announcement. Somebody named Ryan lost his wallet, and he has everything in it. So, look around. And let's link up. And before we do, Andre's message about the responsibility that we have was awesome. Before we close with the Serenity Prayer, let's say together the responsibility statement. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there, and for that I am responsible.